and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds.
This is Bob Fitrakis bringing you the other side of the news on WGRN 94.1. This is Bob Fitrakis bringing you the other side of the news on WGRN 94.1, the Green Renaissance. And I'm here with Michael Duty, one of the founders of the Cusick Street Garden. Many consider it the best community garden in Columbus and lifelong resident of Columbus, Ohio. Welcome to the other side of the news.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm doing well, but you're not doing quite as well because what many of us believe is the best community garden in Columbus is under assault by a developer. Can you tell us a little about it, the history there?
Sure, the history. There were some folks in a group called Green Drinks that I was in, including Dan Weisenbach, Tad Dritz, and some others. And we saw that the City of Columbus Earth Day was not quite what it should be. And that was 12 years ago. And so the first year's theme that we had to revitalize Earth Day was exactly what Michelle Obama said, start a community garden. I went to the Salvation Army, who had an empty lot at 641 East Kossuth, said, can we have a little corner and start a community garden and have events there? Yes, no fee, they mow the lawn. So we've been doing that for 12 years. We've had voter registration. We've had social justice art nights. We've had concerts that speak about social justice. We have a Commonwealth meetings here in the garden where neighbors just can meet neighbors. That was something we've been doing for 12 years. We then realized that Salvation Army was going to be selling the land and that it was going to be $109,000. We wanted to buy it and expand the garden and turn it into an environmental studies area. It's nearly 1 acre. And so that garden was, like I said, $109,000. And this is 2.5 years ago. And we came up with $100,000, and the Salvation Army said, well, it's $109,000. Shortly, we said, we'll come back with the rest of the money. And we have patrons that were bringing the money together. And so in that meantime, I had contacted and previously Mayor Ginther, and through emails, not hearing anything, I went to a meeting and gave him a handwritten note that we wanted him to set up a meeting with the Salvation Army, not asking for money from the city, just to facilitate a meeting and with Salvation Army showing our plan. Since he had not replied to the emails, we gave him a handwritten note at a meeting, and the city refused to do that. We don't know why, but that's the way it was. So then along comes the developer. Remember, we had $100,000. And the developer got it for $100,000. That was odd, but the developer said, well, I'll introduce you to the architect. I'm not going to be doing anything with it, but we will just be a speculator and we'll be selling that land to a developer. And so we thought that we could buy the land, even as late as October 23rd, that we could buy the land, because as we were speaking of it, the developer said that we could get a public-private partnership and get that land and get it off of him. And I said, well, it'd be a fair and equitable price. We're not deep-pocketed, but it would improve the value of your homes that you're building there. And we were asking out of that acre, near acre, 130 feet by 30 feet section. He changed his mind at the Civic Association meeting and said that his partners would not allow that, that it would cut into their profit margin. He submitted them to, had previously submitted a zoning request because that land used to be a kosher slaughterhouse where friends of mine whose fathers were liberated from Nazi Germany concentration camps came to live in this, the first Jewish home ownership neighborhood in the 20s. After the 40s, people from concentration camps and emigres came here to live with host families. My friend, especially one friend, she said, my father worked here. This was a kosher slaughterhouse. I said, wow, that's interesting. So then it became a produce warehouse, and then on to the Salvation Army, who was going to build something there, but it ended up on Long Street, which is better because it's on a bus line. So that's where our garden got started. That's the background on us and the background on how the developer got it for the same price that we got it. Enter now then the developer into the Civic Association, Southern Orchards, and then to the Southside Area Commission. There's a lot wrong with his application. One being that his, and I notified at these meetings before the votes of the omissions of facts and falsifications actually on sworn affidavits, submissions of the zoning and variances required to go from commercial to his needed residential. That would be one that sticks out with his home address being 622 East Kossuth. That's an empty, unmailable address. It's an empty parking lot adjoining the site of 641. He got both for $100,000, putting him over an acre of land. And so despite that, the Civic Association, we voted down with the help only of our one representative, Donna Hughes, but all of our civic elected leaders and our area commissioner voted for the developer. The rank and file of our citizenry voted against the zoning. The variance is passed onto the Southside Area Civic Association, where the zoning chair, just moments before the vote, said that the city staff has already approved the developer's plans. Speaking to Nicole Harper, aide to zoning chair, city council member Tyson, said that's emphatically, that was not true. That was about.
Well, it also would be violating their own procedures. So, and making a mockery of the entire area commissions.
Yes.
But it's good issue. The fact that somebody would say that at that moment would show an absolute contempt for the democratic process and the legal process.
True, Bob. And so in that meeting, it was a two of the commissioners didn't show up. So you had a vote of 10 of the 12 commissioners. And other than Mike Alcock and Aaron Sink, who voted against the developer's plans, knowing we're using zoning as a tool to have a reset button and to discuss this and not give blanket acceptance to the developer's plans, that it went 8-2, 8-2, 8-2, and a quick vote. I had 3 minutes to speak. I was muted thereafter, although I asked to say more, but the developer got like 5 minutes, and then all questions that were answered by the developer had no rebuttal from me. So it didn't seem to be the most democratic process, but I'm finding out from other organizations.
Was there a site visit yet? Usually if you're gonna, you know, have variances and zone or rezone, they have to come to the site, and it's wide open in terms of questions and answers.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I had said that I would be meeting them on the site. It was a Zoom meeting on a Saturday morning, just before the 24th, the vote on November 24th. So as far as I know, there was no actual physical visit to the site. And when Mr. Davis spoke about there was an offer for us to take over the urban forest, which is down the street from us, that is differently configured, wouldn't have the green space for our events, but there are raised beds, but no water. Nobody's really tended that.
Oh, yeah, more the urban desert than the urban forest.
Yeah, well, actually, you know what?
Not no water.
Bob, we're using the term food apartheid. not food desert anymore, because when a government and bodies join to really cut off people's access to food, and you know that the Giant Eagle is going down on Whittier for the Pizzuti project, that will mean that my people that don't have cars and walk to the store will now be back to getting their groceries at gas stations and an IGA, which is nice on rent on Parsons. And we do have the All People's Fresh Market for them to get some fruits and vegetables. But it is now called food apartheid.
Well, one of the issues is the question of memorials that are at your site, your street garden. And of course, do you have people's ashes there at all? Anything like that?
Yes, we do. We have cremains from homicide victims, people that have worked in that garden. One young man died at age 26, 4 years ago. I saw him grow up from being about 4 years old. He'd work in our garden. His aunt was also a homicide victim, and she's the grandmother of our little librarian named Wiggles. Their cremains are in there. We have had memorials and plants that are in there for Emily Noble, most recently, who enjoyed our garden. Of course, Amber Evans and Ruben Castillo Herrera, as well as a fallen firefighter from Station 14 down here, Herm. And there was an officer, a SWAT officer, who was shot in Clintonville named Steve Smith in a barricade situation. There's others, musicians that have died that have played on that spot are in there. So, and you're right, Bob, what I bring up to people is, if we were a free clinic, would we so easily be dismissed? We are a free clinic. We grow medicinal herbs and we show people how to make tinctures and to use them. If we were a library, which we are, we have that little library, like the first here on the south side. If we were a school, would we be easily dismissed? We are. We have educational programs for kids. We work with the juvenile delinquent court system, juvenile court system, at-risk youths, and the kids convicted can go through a community service by working in our garden. And we've been a hub to get that started in other gardens as well. So we're not just a garden, we're much more. And to think that we can move easily is not quite correct, because first of all, gardens are living organisms. Secondly, we have that green space that just can't quite be replicated. So we may go down, but we'll help other gardens and keep our mission going. But they'll lose a real gem that has appeared in the Atlantic magazine, has appeared in national NPR, as well as other environmental and social justice blogs. And just a month and a half ago, we were named the Neighborhood Improvement Garden of the Year, Franklin Park Conservatory Growing to Green, with a commendation, I should mark, from our county commissioners and our city council. How can you pat us on the back one moment and the next month say, you need to go? It's the way it's been done all the time.
You're listening to The Other Side of the News. I'm Bob Fitrakis, and my guest today, Michael Duty, founder and director of the Cossack Street Garden, which the developers are coming to devour. And the question is, of course, in my mind, are there any tax abatements involved here? My neighborhood, Old Town East, on the Near East Side, essentially all the tax abatements are going to the new builds and rehabs that cost a ton of money. So the wealthiest people with the most expensive houses will be paying no taxes for 15 years. So anything happening there, variances, taxes, that would explain why they're coming for your community garden?
Yes, that question was brought up, and the developer was honest and said, we will be going for tax abatements. on these affordable homes. The affordable homes quote that he used is for homes that he says will be $250,000 to $350,000 each.
So significantly over the medium home buying price in the city of Columbus. And those are the affordable homes.
Correct.
They sound like they're nice homes, they're just not affordable.
Right. Average people. Right. Yes. And I did ask, I was told by our representative from Southern Orchards, our area commissioner, that question had come up at a meeting that we had outside of our official meeting. It was a zoning meeting, a subcommittee of Southern Orchards Civic Association. And that person said that you're damn skippy. I'll be going after hard after that tax abatement question to the developer. He never brought it up. And so that was unfortunate. But I had asked the developer and have told the city and others that these are not affordable homes. He shouldn't be using that language. And he's going for tax abatements. What does the city, what does the citizenry get out of that? Except the garden.
A destroyed community garden.
Yep. Yes.
So if we go through sort of this question of variances, do they need variances to build there?
Yes. So they have the zoning request and the three variances, which would include things like the setbacks. In fact, during the discussion at Southside Area Commission, the developer's representative, and it was with beside the developer that night, said that they were told, somebody asked the question, oh, you really don't have much of a front yard, but we do see that you're putting a tree on each backyard. And they said, yeah, that's because the city mandated us to do that. And as far as the greenery, it's in the backyard of people. And in fact, the city staff, I would take that to be zoning, planning and development, told us we'd like to see you reduce your green space. If that's the case, that's going to be an issue, because we now know that this area has about 14% green space canopy, talking the south side of Columbus, whereas like neighborhoods in Cleveland and Cincinnati are around 24 to 28%. We really lag greatly. Those are older towns, and there was a somewhat of a sense from the Robert Olmsted School of Commonwealth grounds. That's been thrown out the window here in Columbus, in my opinion.
Well, one of the things on a variance, if we look at Ohio case law, the question is whether the property in question will yield a reasonable return or whether there can be any beneficial use of the property without the variance. So I take it you're arguing that you don't need to be passing out variances to destroy the community garden. The community garden in and of itself is valuable and beneficial.
Yes, you're exactly right. You hit the nail on the head, Bob, because we do know that not only in regards to food access, education, we're also on a safe zones path, safe streets for kids. And so there's a lot of different things that we do for the neighborhood and for the city of Columbus that won't happen if the developer builds his 10 homes on that property. We would be reducing that to 8 homes, but he would also have that property adjoining that he could, and I implored him to at least build 2 bungalow style affordable homes there. So you're right about what does the citizenry get in return for the variances in the zoning given out to the developer. We get nothing.
Well, another issue is what, quote, whether the essential character of the neighborhood would be substantially altered or whether adjoining properties would suffer a substantial detriment as a result of giving out these variances, which are needed by the developer. Are they altering the neighborhood there? And is it to the detriment if the garden is destroyed and these new units come into being?
Yes, I do agree that as the developer says, but won't say what type of materials are going to be used for the exterior of these homes, that they are going to be homes. They will be homes, their porches pretty much right up to the sidewalk. So you won't have, front porches used to mean a lot, and they do in my neighborhood. People are out, that's how people communicate, even without a garden. So there really wouldn't be much of a frontage to these properties with these variances and the setback reductions. But there are going to be homes if they, I mean, it's not going to be a monolith. It's not going to look like what Pizzuti's property is going to look like, apparently, unless the city changes on the Whittier Street development where Giant Eagle is. They would be homes. We, again, don't know what type of materials would be used. That question was asked at the area commissioner and also at the civic association level. And the developer said they hadn't made a decision. Well, what's going on in our area is they're building metal homes, which are beginning to rust from the bottom, believe it or not. They don't look the same. So we really don't know if the homes themselves will look anything like the wooden clapboard or brick homes, vinyl-sided homes in our neighborhood that are nearly 100 years old. But we do know with the removal of the garden, that will be a significant reduction in neighborhood interaction and all the other missions that we're on and have been successful with to date.
All right. One of the important questions on zoning, one of my favorites, is whether the spirit and intent behind the zoning requirement would be observed and substantial justice done by granting the variance. Who's on the side of the justice here? Community garden or the developer out to make a buck looking for tax abatements?
Yeah, I think that answer's pretty obvious. It would definitely be, and it's been said by the developer, as I spoke before, is Bob, that it would hurt his bottom line, that he spoke to his developers and it would eat into his profit. Well, a quick look at what his profit could be if he's going to sell an average home at $300,000 and builds a home that's worth $200,000, that's $100,000 each. That's $1 million. So you take away, some of that, his profit could go from $1 million to somewhere around $850,000. That's still a pretty nice little payday for just signing your name. He does live in Carroll, Ohio. He has partners, and it was revealed by them that after they said that they just couldn't afford it, that their partner is the Robert Weiler Company, but only as their realtor. I think that, as I pointed out at that meeting, the commission meeting, that they're, or at the civic level, that Robert Weiler Company is rather deep-pocketed, well-known, and well-established as a developer of lands nationally and also greatly here in Columbus. So the plea for hardship does not apply here by this developer, who isn't even of the same party as city council or the mayor. He's a party that has an elephant as their symbol.
So it's real curious that they're only paying $100,000. Very powerful developers are involved, and they'll be building essentially on the memorials and ashes and remains of fallen heroes, movement heroes, as well as homicide victims. How come there hasn't been more reporting on that?
Well, I think that's an important thing. I'm trying to get the...
Yeah, because it could be sacrilege.
Yeah, Right.
We've and Tim Chavez had a question. Is the sale closed for the land? It's a done deal?
The sale of the land is a done deal. That was done August 28, 2018. So we knew the day would come where we may be asked to leave, but we were under the impression, as told by Mr. Cohen, the developer, that he was just the speculator. He wasn't going to be doing anything, that he would be selling the land and he would introduce us to the new owner and the new architect, and we could work out a deal with them perhaps to stay. That all changed last month. And he did offer us $5,000 to move after he had announced that deeded us off. But $5,000 on a nearly $1 million clearance, net profit to him in his pocket and his partners, the Robert Weiner Company, is pretty good return on investment to get us quietly off the land.
Well, people can read about this in detail at columbusfreepress.com. Michael Duty, in last minute here, what can people do to help support the community garden?
Sure. I'm asking people and organizations, especially social justice organizations, to be mindful of whose ashes are in there and what we do for the community, social justice-wise. This summer, we have, after the George Floyd murder, we had Monday nights dedicated to families and kids. We supplied the paints along with A.J. Vandarelli, the Vandarelli Room, that they would quote Dr. King on yard signs, take them home, that they write Priscilla Tyson's aide, who is Nicole Harper, and give their thoughts on this, using that 2017 study as a talking point, as well as the others we've mentioned tonight. And her email address is NN, as in Nancy Nancy, Harper, H-A-R-P-E-R, at columbus.gov. The city council meeting was to be on 12/7, but that's been Miss Harper told us that this is not coming up on the 7th, but I believe it could come up at the very next meeting, which council meets every Monday, so that would put it on the 14th, and then we'd be getting into Christmas week. So I think they need to get out to NN Harper at columbus.gov before the 10th, or certainly the 11th of December, so that they can have it. And a CC Kossuth Garden, K-O-S-S-U-T-H Garden at gmail.com, so I can have a good accounting of how many letters went to council.
All right. Thanks. Read about it in Columbus Free Press. Thank you, Michael Duty. Thanks for being on the other side of the news.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to the other side of the news. This is Bob Fitrakis.
And Dan Dugan, WGRN 94.1 LPFM, The Green Renaissance.